The walls in Michael Burke's apartment are an expression of pride. Framed snapshots are everywhere. Pictures of Michael lunging for a fly on the softball field. In another, he's wearing a life vest, rowing up New York's East River. And there are several shots of Michael in his carpenter's gear, surrounded by rubble and smoke.
There's a fire truck right there. There's a car right there. See, half the fire truck is missing. All right.
You can see that dust has caked over everything.
Without a doubt. A lot more than dust, I'll tell you.
In the snapshots, Michael is an imposing figure. His shoulders are broad, his limbs lean but muscular. The pictures remind Michael of the man he used to be, before he spent weeks doing rescue work and reconstruction at Ground Zero, before he developed a constellation of health problems.
They found dead heart muscle on the outside of my heart because I was having pains across my chest. And what they said was that the amount of pressure we put on the lungs, it diverted to the heart, basically. They did a test to see if I had any blockages, so they didn't find any blockages.
When you went to your doctor, what is your diagnosis?
You want me to read it? I have it on paper here. Glasses. It's what they call RADS, R-A-D-S. Lung damage and psychological sequelae, whatever that is. Cardiovascular disease. I have a cardiomyopathy. Gastroesophageal reflux. Occupational asthma. And disability, totally disabled. That's about it.
Michael Burke spent 2 months in Lower Manhattan building replacement windows for buildings surrounding the Ground Zero site. He now spends his days in a small, one-bedroom apartment just outside New York City. Every flat surface, the tables, the top of the refrigerator, the computer stand, is littered with pills and inhalers and day-of-the-week dispensers.
I was a carpenter since 1979, and I never missed a day at work, ever. I ran track, played basketball, you know, swam. I did all them things. Not anymore. If I take the garbage all the way around the side of the building and come back, that's it, I'm out of breath. I go to the gym for my heart, but I only walk 3 miles an hour, and after 20 minutes, like as if I did a day's work.
Medical screenings have found that almost half the police officers, firefighters, emergency technicians, and construction crews who did rescue and recovery work at Ground Zero are now suffering from respiratory ailments or mental health problems. Dr. Stephen Levin is the medical director of the Mount Sinai Center for Occupational and Environmental Medicine in New York. The center has screened more than 6,000 construction workers and tradesmen who worked at Ground Zero.
Half of the people we're seeing now still are having persistent upper airway complaints of congested nose, congested sinuses, facial pressure, headaches, the classic symptoms of sinus problems. And when we examine these people physically, we can see evidence of the inflammation. Roughly the same proportion of people have pulmonary problems, problems relating to their lower airways in their chest, with cough, with shortness of breath, chest tightness, wheezing, loss of exercise tolerance, chest discomfort, chest tightness when you wake up in the morning.
Almost 2 years after the World Trade Center tragedy, doctors, scientists, and government officials are still struggling to understand the health risks that workers at Ground Zero faced. And they're still debating the question of whether enough was done to protect the men and women who spent months working near the pile of debris.
One could see, if one watched the television coverage, that many people were on that pile without any respiratory protection. Some were wearing the surgical gauze masks. Some had bandanas tied around their face. Some had stopped at the local hardware store and gotten dust masks, which were pretty ineffective. But many people were there without any respiratory protection.
After the collapse of the World Trade Center towers, a thick, gritty cloud of dust and smoke covered Lower Manhattan.
We have a pretty good idea of what was in the air at that point, and it included such things as pulverized concrete dust, pulverized glass, fibrous glass, some asbestos, and a host of burn products. When PVC plastic burns, and PVC plastic is what insulates all the wiring that's used in a building like the World Trade Center's towers. when that material burns, it releases hydrochloric acid mist. And it was measurable down there.
And Levin says a toxic mix like that can wreak havoc on the human body.
When that powdered material is inhaled and hits the moisture, which lines the entire respiratory tract, really from the nose and throat all the way down into the recesses of the lung, it dissolves and markedly changes what's known as the pH, how alkaline the material is. And highly alkaline material, like lye, or highly acid material, like any acid, when this pulverized concrete hits the moisture in the respiratory tract, it dissolves and produces a local chemical burn.
Government agencies and private construction companies scrambled to bring hundreds of heavy-duty respirators to Ground Zero, but they were often the wrong kind. The problem was no single filter could possibly screen for the vast array of toxic debris in the air. The respirators often fit poorly, and because they cover the nose and mouth, they're cumbersome, hot, and difficult to wear for long periods of time. In the chaos that followed the collapse of the towers, the government agencies normally responsible for enforcing safety standards decided to relax their rules to prevent any kind of bureaucratic delay from slowing down the rescue effort. Joel Shufro, with the New York Committee on Occupational Safety and Health, says he understands that reasoning to a point.
The first 3 to 5 days, one would give credence to that argument. In the first 3 to 5 days, workers, you know, they were not concerned with their health. They were on a mission.
But as the rescue effort turned into a recovery operation, when it became clear after weeks that no survivors would be found, the government never activated full enforcement of the safety regulations that might have required Ground Zero workers to wear protective gear whether they wanted to or not. Shufro says that decision was part of the government's overall effort to reassure a traumatized public that the air around Ground Zero did not pose a significant health risk. And on September 17th, less than 1 week after the Trade Center disaster, the city of New York reopened Wall Street.
Ladies and gentlemen, our heroes will now open the marketplace, the green button.
This was widely viewed as an important symbolic gesture, displaying American resilience and strength. The next day, the administrator of the Environmental Protection Agency, Christy Todd Whitman, announced that the air and drinking water near Ground Zero was safe. She was just as confident a few days earlier when she spoke with NPR's Susan Stamberg.
Christine Todd Whitman, the smoke from the World Trade Center fires was so bad it could actually be seen from space. And rescuers are still having problems breathing there. A lot of them are wearing scarves around their mouths as well as goggles for their eyes. Is the air safe?
If you're at the center of the site, if you're Ground Zero, obviously there are a lot of irritants. They need to be wearing masks. They need to be wearing scarves. But for the population as a whole, if you're not in the immediate area, all the samplings that we have been doing have been showing nothing that should cause a health concern. We have intermittent air monitors. We are moving them around the city. Wherever the plume goes, we're monitoring to make sure people are safe, and we'll let them know if there's any reason for concern.
Whitman has stood by that early assessment. She told NPR last month that measurements of air quality in Lower Manhattan found that particulate matter and asbestos do not, to our knowledge and to our science, pose a short-term health threat. The EPA's pollution tests from those smoke-filled days following the terrorist attack found that dangerous pollutants in and around Ground Zero were either non-detectable or below established levels of concern.
Well, they were wrong.
That's Dr. Stephen Levin of Mount Sinai Hospital. He says the air samples taken at Ground Zero did not measure for lead, pulverized concrete, or other potentially toxic construction materials. Regardless, he says, the potential dangers should have been obvious.
When we saw people being carried off that pile with their eyes streaming, coughing and hacking, unable to breathe, when we saw people downwind from Ground Zero, block, two blocks away, with eyes streaming, coughing, as a consequence of what they had inhaled over the first couple days, we knew that the air monitoring data wasn't going to answer the entire question if they were saying that it was safe, because in fact, there were clearly materials that were provoking health responses in people, and one could see it. You know, one didn't even have to have an examining room. One could watch TV and see that it was so.
Hundreds of representatives from the Occupational Safety and Health Administration monitored the site to help protect workers. However, the officials did not require workers to wear masks or respirators, and they did not dole out fines to those who failed to do so. Again, OSHA did not want to slow down the recovery effort, but a group of doctors, lawyers, and advocates representing Ground Zero workers who've become sick says OSHA might have adopted more aggressive enforcement if the EPA had done more extensive monitoring.
Our regulatory process really broke down in this whole situation.
Again, Joel Shufro with the New York Committee on Occupational Safety and Health.
It's a really outrageous situation that workers who were our heroes, who went down and gave their all, you know, were not appropriately informed and trained and provided with the respirators that they needed to protect themselves. Those men, and they were mainly men, but a large number of women, were really heroes. But there is no reason why those heroes had to be martyrs.
This was the American Express building, and you can see where the steel girders just came down and cut that whole building right there.
Back at Michael Burke's apartment, the pictures that he keeps chronicle his time at Ground Zero. His life is now defined by the events of that one September day.
Look at the cloud. Look at that. You can't even see.
You know, I noticed something, Mike. No one in these pictures is wearing a respirator.
There you go. I told you.
But you have them around your neck. You're not wearing them.
No.
Respirators don't do you much good if they're around your neck.
No. Well, you can't be wearing them all the time, you see. That's what I was saying, you know.
Michael Burke is left to wonder if that mask may have made a difference, if his life will ever be the same, if his health will ever get any better.
I pray that it does, one day at a time, that I do get a little better, you know. But in saying that, I'm not a little better, you know. I guess that's just the way it is. I'm not the only one, so, you know, I can't be feeling sorry for myself. And I just pray that I wake up every day right now, and I'll continue to take my medicine. And hopefully not too many other guys will get sick, you know. And hopefully we won't have another tragedy.
There are many like Michael Burke, workers who were at and around Ground Zero, who are now sick, and thousands more have developed less severe but lifelong maladies. The EPA says health risks around the pile were minimal, but it's a claim Michael Burke has a hard time accepting each time he strains to breathe through his scarred lungs.